working in Palestine so they can see and witness what is happening to the Palestinian people. And yes, everybody can help in their own way. You can contact your legislator, your senator. You can put pressure. If you are in the U.S., you can put pressure on those elected officials to tell them, you know, this abuse to human rights cannot continue. And since the U.S. Gives Israel billions of dollars each year, then it is actually running this illegitimate military occupation, the Israeli occupation of Palestine. And the Americans should say to their government, not in our name, don't be part of this occupation, and instead work for a real and comprehensive peace in the Middle East. As we know, most conflicts over there are, in a way or another, related in the core to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And if the U.S. wants to achieve peace in that region, it must act on ending this illegitimate Israeli occupation of Palestine.
Well, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Syed Banora, the editor-in-chief of the International Middle East Media Center. More information and that prisoner document can be found on their website, imemc.org. Thanks for joining us today, Syed.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This is Cenk Soderberg with KBOO News.
His eyes are filled with hate. He said the problem with those Arabs is they won't recognize a Jewish state. He said those Palestinians just won't come around to accepting Jewish rule on their holy ground. He said the Arabs don't accept their new neighbors in the hood. Those ungrateful regimes just don't respect us as they should. Well, I don't want to upset anyone or unduly take to task, but if a state wants recognition, it seems reasonable to ask, where are your borders drawn in black and white? Do they include the West Bank, Gaza, and the Golan Heights? Let me repeat.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, Portland, 91.9 FM, Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM, Philomath and Corvallis. Up next, Occupy Radio.
KBOO Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present the May film in the monthly sex workers film series, Mr. Angel, on Friday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. Shot over 6 years, Mr. Angel is a documentary that chronicles the life of Buck Angel, a transgender advocate, educator, and porn pioneer. Again, that's Friday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street. More information about this film and the Sex Workers film series can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO and Ear to the Streets of Portland are proud to welcome local artist and poet Taria Autry, the author of her latest book of poetry, Roots, Reality, and Rhyme, May 1st, 2014, starting at 7 o'clock p.m. Taria will be performing excerpts from her book of poetry live on KBOO airwaves and will also be available for a book signing at KBOO Radio. Stay tuned for Freeform Fabulous Thursdays for an intimate night of 60 soul music following Ear to the Streets. That's Thursday, May 1st, 2014, from 7 o'clock p.m. for Ear to the Streets of Portland, followed by a Freeform Fabulous Thursday right here on your community radio, KBOO 90.7 FM, and online at www.kboo.fm.
Gandhi said the roots of your destiny are in your beliefs.
Join Prison Pipeline on May 12th for a one-hour special called This I Believe.
We are women sharing deeply held beliefs that guide our lives. We are women incarcerated at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility.
Tune in to Prison Pipeline, May 12th, 6 to 7 p.m.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Sprout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Sprout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Now, Occupy Radio.
It's about time.
5-4-3-2-1. Occupy Radio. I'm Jimmy Tardy. We go again to the Occupy Eugene Media Group, Occupy the Media, and Air Occupy today. Air Occupy, which, by the way, is produced in Ormond Beach, Florida. And Air Occupy will be talking about the FCC, low power FM radio, and the importance of community radio. Listen for the excitement in their voices as they talk about the power of and need for local programming. We have it good here in Portland, and as we head into our pledge drive starting next week, please keep in mind how valuable KBOO is to you and the community, and don't be afraid to be part of the necessary support work that makes your local programming possible here at KBOO. This is Occupy Radio. I'm Jimmy Tardy. Let me take this opportunity to thank all of our supporters over the past 2.5 years that we've been doing Occupy Radio here at KBOO, KBOO. KBOO was present at the encampments in downtown Portland and gave us a lot of opportunity to speak to the community, tell them what our concerns were and what our needs were. And of course, Portland responded. So once again, tonight, we're going to be hearing from Air Occupy, which is part of the Occupy Eugene Media Group, as we continue to spread across the country and across the world, occupying the airwaves.
Good morning and welcome to Air Occupy, the show that speaks truth to power and will occupy your mind. This is Jerry and I'm here with Shannon this morning.
Good morning.
Liz is on assignment. Actually, it's Liz's birthday. She's got the
day
off.
Happy birthday, Liz.
So happy birthday, Liz.
Happy birthday.
Friday and no small victory for the earth. The Keystone XL pipeline decision was put off, potentially killing it, but not obviating the need to get out and continue to protest against it. In D.C., ranchers and native people getting together, largely from Nebraska and South Dakota, I think.
Right, the cowboy.
To be on the mall and to take and present Obama with a painted teepee. Very interesting. Mm. They're going to be occupying, in a sense. They put up a teepee camp on the mall. So there you go. Occupy's alive and well, people.
Yes, indeed it is.
So, and we also wanted to acknowledge, Liz being gone, Shannon and I were scrambling this week to put together the show because Liz, in truth, is the moving force behind the show. And so our hat's off to her, but it necessitated us doing a lot of work this week, and we are marking the second anniversary of our show today.
Yes, we are.
So we've got planned for the future a show that's going to be a compendium of what we've done over the course of a couple years and a suggestion of where we're going to go in the future. But 2-year anniversary doesn't seem like 2 years.
No, it doesn't. It's just blown by. It's incredible that it's been 2 years. And we're like right in the thick of things. You know, Jerry alluded to what's been going on for us this week, and in true occupier style, we are involved in addressing some of the issues that came to the forefront in the Occupy movement, like homelessness and the bank foreclosure crisis, leaving us with decimated neighborhoods and zombie houses. So that's what we've been doing this week. The continuum of care is very simply all of the community as it relates to homelessness. HUD lays out who would comprise the continuum of care, which would be businesses, advocates, service agencies, schools, universities, law enforcement, city and county government, housing authorities, religious organizations.
People without shelter.
People without shelter.
You got to come out to the meeting. This is where it all gets organized.
That's right. That's right. And HUD realizes and states very clearly through the Hearth Act, the Congressional Hearth Act, that the community is critical to addressing homelessness.
And on a not unrelated issue, and I know an issue that's been kind of percolating up in a number of cities around, with councils being concerned about abandoned houses in our foreclosure crisis. And so the citizens of Ormond Beach have taken on the task of going out and evaluating properties that are abandoned. And they intend to do a presentation on May 14th in the auditorium of the Ormond Beach Library at 5:30 p.m. about what their study has revealed about unoccupied homes and banks not dealing with properties that they have foreclosed upon. So that's an important meeting. Again, May 14th, the auditorium of the Ormond Beach Library at 5:30 p.m. Well, we have a great show today, and it concerns the importance and prospects for independent local media, in particular audio and radio media programming. We're pleased to have with us today Mr. James LeGarry, who is the venerable host of Citizen Soapbox, which airs on WELE 1380 AM on Friday evenings from 6:30 to 8 p.m., and Charles Knaus, an applicant for a low-power FM radio license, which the FCC is currently issuing across the country. So we're looking forward to talking to them. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back on the other side with the discussion. We're going to hear Deep in It by San Germain. Welcome back to Air Occupy. I thought before we began the discussion today, we could provide a little bit of a bigger context within which to think about the need to foster independent local media, in particular radio. So for those that don't know, over the past 20 years or so, there's been a move to deregulate the former limitations on holding broadcast licenses. And that whole process has been overseen by the Federal Communications Commission. The FCC is charged by law with regulating our public airwaves, and part of their mission is to ensure diversity of viewpoints, localism, and I think by that they mean that local content, local programming, and diversity of ownership. But as I indicated before, since 1996 and the passage of the Telecommunications Act, whereas previously you could own 40 total radio stations across the country, now that has become unlimited. And we have a handful of media corporations who have gone out and purchased thousands of radio stations, oftentimes multiple radio stations in one market. For example, Clear Channel Communications owns more than 1,200 radio stations in 300 cities and dominates the audience share in the top 100 markets, radio markets in the country. There are also other corporations that own a significant number of radio stations. Cumulus Media owns 300 stations in 60 markets. Infinity Broadcasting Corp. owns 160 stations in 35 markets. And not only are most radio stations owned by a few corporations, the programming on these stations is not locally produced. I just saw recently where Westwood One, which is a big audio content provider, was bought by Cumulus Media, which owns all of those radio stations. And they provide media content to a limited number of their partners, and that information goes out nationally. So one of the things that suffers when we have this concentration of ownership of radio stations is we don't have much local coverage anymore. We are being fed a feed out of a station somewhere else, and it goes on 300 stations all across the country, and it's pretty homogenized, and it's not particular to what's going on in our community.
One of the figures that I read indicated that locally owned news broadcasts have 5.5 more minutes of local news than these Clear Channel and Tribune and these other conglomerates. And we're talking, I believe, 8 firms control most of the media in the country. 8 firms. So it's just ludicrous that we're in this situation, and that you can have just like one district. I think something that really interested me was Jim Phillips from Orlando, who has a major, major market share, wasn't anywhere in the figures that I looked up yesterday. And that's a Clear Channel station, I believe. Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
I think you also had some information about Clear Channel being owned by our old friends at Bain Capital.
That's Mr. Wannabe President, 2-time, I believe. Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. And look at the money. Look at it. I mean, you're talking Clear Channel's annual revenue is, was it, $6.246 billion a year. We're talking a staff of 14,000-15,000 people controlling controlling that much money, which I'm sure that Mr. Wannabe President probably gets a major piece of that. But you know, that's still a lot of money to throw around.
So this concentration of the media has not stopped. In fact, there's been developments recently that the FCC is going to move further towards allowing not just the concentration of radio stations in one hand, but the ownership of both TV stations, newspapers, and radio stations under the same banner. And that's unlike the station we're on here, and which is locally owned and largely focuses on local programming. We're not one of those stations here.
You know, we've had a couple of shows on this issue, and one of them was with Sue Wilson, who produced a documentary, Broadcast Blues, and talks about this issue in depth. She was on our show. There are a number of things lost by this concentrated ownership of media is information that's of utmost importance to you as a member of the community, from what's going on locally, what your government's doing locally, what community groups are doing in your area, to safety issues, you know, as covered by Sue Wilson in Broadcast Blues, you know, storm warnings, or, you know, there's just so much information that we need as members of a community that we are not getting, because radio stations like this one that really focus on local issues and local voices are being snapped up.
I think the other thing that you might want to consider, Shannon, is the arts and culture scene and local musicians and artists, poets. That's another aspect. It isn't just the news, but it's the arts and culture aspect of it as well.
Absolutely. For our listeners, that was Charles Nouse. And Jim LeGarry is also on with us. Liz, as we mentioned, is not here right now, but it's me and Jerry. And
so the FCC has now got a proposed notice of rulemaking out, and what they're going to that addresses these ownership rules, which are changing now again. And they portend that we're going to have even more media consolidation. So the law requires the FCC every 4 years to review its ownership rules, and they call it the quadrennial review. You may be surprised to find out in 2010 they didn't complete the review. So the one that's now being sent out for approval for 2014 time frame is that which has been proposed. And what they're going to do is retain the same radio ownership rules, which right now the rules as to how many stations you can own in any given market is based on the size of the market. But they kind of radically want to move to a point where they want to eliminate the cross-ownership restrictions on newspapers and radios in the same market. So that would allow the person that owned the newspaper to also own the radio stations, and you get into a concern about diversity of viewpoint and, you know, one person controlling an entire message for a local area.
I'd like to speak to that for just a minute. It so happens that I am the daughter of a newspaper woman. I'm hoping she's listening. My mother, Collins Connor, was an investigative journalist for the St. Petersburg Times, which is renowned for its in-depth coverage of issues. That's not so much the case anymore. I mean, still, it's renowned and very solid in the presentation of information. But as the markets become more and more dominated by advertising, it's affected what news is presented and how the length of service of reporters, how much in depth they're allowed to get into stories. My mother was nominated for the Pulitzer twice, and it was based on reporting, for instance, on substandard construction of houses after Andrew wiped out an entire area in South Florida because the houses weren't built to code. And she tracked that straight up to the state level, where there was this permission of cutting corners that allowed these houses to be built, so they just dropped to the ground. This is the kind of coverage that's so important, but if you have paper, newspaper media, and radio media that's dominated by the money that's flowing into it from advertisers and from corporations, and whose message is controlled by those corporations, then we're missing information that we need.
I'm amongst the things I read last night was Mayor Daley of Chicago. We've all heard of him. I think he was a major player in Chicago for 20 years. This is Junior. He didn't get along with the Tribune Corporation. The Tribune owns the Chicago Times, I believe, and four radio stations. So anything that they couldn't get into the Tribune was a wash. And one of the quotes that I'm going to maul here was, when the White Sox won the pennant, it was not covered at all by any of the Tribune, because they own the Cubs. the Tribune Corporation owns the Cubs, so they're not going to give any credence at all to anything. And you would think that that would be impossible in a city the size of Chicago. But if Daly says it, I believe it. You know, I mean, from that standpoint. It's and I also want to comment on the Daytona Beach News Journal. The Daytona Beach News Journal was bought at a fire sale, if you recall, a few years ago. It owns it is owned by the Halifax Media, which owns 22 other pieces. So I'm saying that with your corporate office being elsewhere, perhaps your local investigative situation isn't everything it could be. And as far as money, there must be money. There has to be money in the operation of newspapers, but we're certainly not sending it around. We're sending it back to corporate offices, I would suggest.
It looks like we have a caller.
Hi, I have some questions for you, and I'm looking for information. I've never listened to your show before.
Well, thanks for tuning in. We can also be heard all our past shows at AirOccupy.com.
And Occupy the Airwaves.
OccupyTheMedia.Podomatic.com is another place where we have all our old shows listed. So if you have any interest in going and looking at what we've covered, you go to AirOccupy.com, and there's a summary of all the shows, and you can listen to them there.
Okay. So do you guys, are you the Occupy movement, or you represent, represent your voice of?
It's very interesting.
This area?
It's very interesting because the show is called Air Occupy, and it had its roots in the Occupy movement. We were participated in the occupation here in Daytona Beach, and when that ended, we got together, Liz and Shannon and I, and thought, how can we continue the kind of advocacy we want to see happen? And we decided to do a show that would provide people with information about subjects that they hear about in the news and provide an independent voice where we could bring on experts in the fields that we cover and people who are experiencing the issues that we're talking about, and give people kind of an unvarnished view and some background on important issues.
Generally, this is Shannon. Our issues are national or international academics, and that's a lot of, we cover climate change subjects, bank regulations. We've done a lot of coverage on the issue of homelessness. That's some of the types of formatting we have.
Okay, well, if I could ask you this question.
Sure.
This is about income inequality, and actually, as a local issue, I happened to be listening to the station, and they were interviewing two general managers from the local Hampton Inns, and the host took issue with a city commissioner who stated that we need jobs that have better incomes and not hospitality jobs, which are incredibly low income. And he really lit into this woman for stating these beliefs. But when I actually called in and spoke to the general managers, most of the people they employ are housekeeping staff. They don't employ them full time. They don't offer any benefits.
50% of the people they employ are housekeepers.
Right, and they're living at below poverty level wages.
Right,
and at $9.50 an hour starting, and she wouldn't discuss any sort of structure they use to increase that pay. And my point is that when we do that and we pay these below subsistence wages, all of us are actually subsidizing that private corporation, because we're paying for food stamps to feed these people, and we're paying for, if they're not eligible for Medicaid because they don't have children under 12, we're also paying for their hospital services and their medical care, which is fine. These people need this, but we're subsidizing those corporations who should be taking this responsibility.
But this is not just a local issue. I think that this is very true, and but I think we need to somehow restructure what we're doing so that the money does flow more fluidly and more evenly. This is, and the way to do that is, I'm not quite sure.
Raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, a rate at which you know people will be able to sustain themselves and their families, and let's get on with it.
And I think another thing we could do would be to demand that any money that is going to go to industry or or whatever to move to the area, a percentage of that goes to improve the general population. The people that have been here, the people that have been for quite some time subsidizing the governments that want to attract new people and neglect those that have been here for some time.
What would you think about the idea of, as opposed to a minimum wage, if we could establish a living wage in which we said, okay, let's look at the demographic. What is the average rent? What is the average monthly grocery bill for a family? And instead of going with percentages above poverty level, you look at what it actually costs for a family to live in this county, and then you establish a wage, a living wage, based on those, if you will, consumer price indexes for this local area, so that every area would be different based on what the costs are to live there.
Yeah, that's not a bad sense of it. I think that might get a little complicated if you're applying those things in, you know, 40 different markets in Florida. I think it'd be easier just to do, maybe use the baseline as your calculation to look into cost of living, but do it on a broader basis so that, for instance, a state rather than a locality could have a higher minimum wage.
The Medicare system does the exact same thing in reimbursement, where what they do is they take and they figure out how much to pay doctors based on what the costs are in each area. For instance, a doctor in Daytona Beach will get paid a lot less than a doctor in Miami. Why? Because of the cost of practicing in those two different places. They factor in a lot of different. And I don't know why we couldn't do the same thing for living expenses.
Fantastic points. Thank you very much for calling. I hope you enjoy the programming if you look it up.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, bye.
Good call.
Excellent.
So I just want to finish up some stuff about what the FCC has undertaken now. So there's a rule out there, and the public is free to comment on it. The other thing that they're going to do is repeal the rules that restrict radio stations and TV stations being owned in the same market by one party. So not only are they going to eliminate cross-ownership between radio stations and newspapers, they're going to eliminate cross-ownership restrictions on people owning both radio and TV stations. So if you put those two rules together, it looks like what the FCC is headed towards is one person being owned both the TV station, the radio stations, and the newspapers in your town. And I'm not sure how that comports with the charge that the FCC has to ensure diversity, ensure that there's local programming, and ensure that there's diversity of ownership. Obviously, if you allow a handful of corporations to own all of the media outlets and provide their one message, you're not fostering diversity of viewpoints, and you don't have local programming at that point.
And it would tell you that most of the people that on the FCC have never seen Citizen Kane, wouldn't it? it's so silly.
This is Occupy Radio. I'm Jimmy Tardy. Tonight we are listening to Air Occupy, produced in Ormond Beach, Florida. And tonight's subject matter is the FCC, low power FM, and the importance of local community radio and local programming. Again, we're gearing up for our pledge drive, which starts next week. And I want to thank you to everyone who's supported us over the past couple of years, and in general, everyone who supported Occupy in one way or another. We know we have a lot of fans out there, and I know that once Occupy gets in your heart, it stays there, just like KBOO. So get ready to show your support next week when we begin our pledge drive. For now, we're going to go back to Air Occupy, part of the Occupy Eugene Media Group. This episode is produced in Ormond Beach, Florida, the FCC, Low Power FM, and again, the importance of local community programming.
The demographic is extremely high. 70% of the people that listen to talk radio have attended college or university, which is way higher than I thought, or, you know.
Yeah. The other interesting thing that I saw was that the FCC has determined somehow that radio, as opposed to newspaper and television, is not an important source of news that people receive. And I don't know how they make that conclusion.
It's a lie. That's a total lie, because there are more people that get their news from radio than newspapers anymore. And like I said, this consolidation is not good for anything, as far as feeding whatever.
Except for corporate profits.
Except for profits, right.
Well, we're going to take a brief break, and on the other side, we're going to come back and talk to Jim and Charles about their particular endeavors. Jim is show, and Charles is an applicant for a low-power FM station. We're going to be listening to Postales from Federico Abale. Today we're here talking about local radio and the need for local programming and local content on radio stations, just like we used to have, and we want to preserve that. And we have with us today Mr. Jim McGarry, who is the host of Citizen Soapbox.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's kind of interesting to be here during the daytime.
That's great. Well, thanks for coming in. We really wanted to talk to you about your show. What was the origin of your show? What was the thought behind your show? And how long you been doing it?
Okay, we've been doing it for, I believe, about 8 years. Let's see. You guys are celebrating two. I'm into eight, and I'm thinking, you know, I just keep getting younger. The point was, the reason we started doing this was we were opposed to the purchase of Holly Hill by the Swerdlow Corporation. They came in. They swooned the city commission and the mayor with everything that they were going to do for the community. Everything they were going to do for the community was in keeping with Reaganomics. We're going to trickle down to you guys everything that you could possibly want. We're going to solve the flooding problem along Riverside Drive. You remember there was an issue about this. just recently, once again. So at any rate, we tried with the people across town to get some, to get a little traction there. We tried with the News Journal. I forwarded to the News Journal various different articles from South Florida papers elucidating the various different crimes that were alleged that Swerdlow was committing down there. At one point, I think they had 12, 14 lawsuits in the courts, but the News Journal wasn't interested. The News Journal, now, this would make great sense to you if you understood that Swerdlow was taking color, a full color page ad almost every Sunday, which, if I understand correctly, runs into thousands of dollars. So we created this as a format for various different people of a like mind to come in on Fridays and discuss things. We invited the various people who were running for commissioner and mayor. And I don't know, it just turned into so much fun, we felt like we had to do it on the regular. It certainly gives you a little format just to see that there are other citizens with similar views. It also gives you a chance to talk to those that don't have similar views and, you know, get an idea of where they're coming from.
So what's the primary focus of the show? Do you have interviews? Do you talk about local subjects? What do you do on the show exactly?
It depends on the week. We really don't have a set format. We play a little music that you wouldn't hear anywhere else. We discussed, for example, 5 years ago, Eric Klingerman's book, Fighting for Air, which deals with this subject. It starts out, Shannon, I'm sure this is one of the things you alluded to earlier, with the derailment of the train in Idaho. The people that owned the four radio stations, the four local radio stations, it was one group, and they were all automated. So when the phone calls came in to the local radio stations to say, hey, listen, you've got a deadly spill going on there, there was nobody to take the call. This is the reason that Klingerman wrote this book. You could also, if you're of a mind, you can go to more recent articles of his that were published in Mother Jones.
So at that train derailment, what happened was people were trying to call in to get the word out, and the radio stations didn't actually have human beings. Rather, they were paying tapes of music from some other location.
Right. Exactly. And that's what we're looking at. You're looking at the amalgamation. There are, like we said earlier, there are 8 media firms that control more than half of all of the discourse going on in the United States. That's television, radio, and newspapers.
Amazing. Now,
that's astonishing. And that somebody thinks that that can be that can be the way of it. And that's the way we're going to create diversity, and we're going to communicate here. I showed this to you earlier, Jerry. The people, the foremost people that want to tell you that there is a vast liberal conspiracy in the media are Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, and this woman, Laura Ingraham. And they are all handled by premier networks. And Premier Networks is owned by Clearwire. How do you like them apples? So here we have these people making huge, huge sums of money by preying on people who don't get any other source. You know, most of these radios, I think, must be locked in on you know, wherever dingbat thing goes or what it is.
What does that list indicates that these people have between, Limbaugh's got 14 million listeners, Hannity's got 13.5 million listeners.
13 and a quarter,
incredible,
yeah.
Incredible numbers of people. So if we're saying that local radio is sort of a dying media, I think people haven't looked at these numbers. There's a lot of people listening in the radio. I know I do in the car, almost exclusively. I'm listening to the radio.
I do too. I listen to a lot more radio since I came here. You know, because I want to hear what other people are saying. I even listen to the cross town guy occasionally, and all I can say there is his national stuff is pretty good. It really is. But his local stuff is restricted to 0.5% of the Halifax area population.
We want to welcome Charles Knaus into the studio today. Charles, I understand you're the applicant for a low-power FM radio station here in the Daytona area. It's kind of interesting. So the FCC is making available to people in communities to do so-called community radio to apply for and receive a low-power FM permit, basically, right, to have your own miniature radio station.
Yeah, that's correct, Jerry. Actually, I'm not applying for it personally. I'm technically the president of a nonprofit called We've a Voice. And right now we're just registered as a Florida nonprofit. We haven't gotten our 501(c) status, so unfortunately I can't promise anybody who wants to make a gift. And if anybody would like to give a gift, which we really need right now, I'd be happy to give you my phone number. You can contact me or leave it here with the station, and we'll arrange for that. But what's happened is there's thousands of low-power FM licenses that the FCC has put up for bid, but only nonprofits can submit a bid for these licenses. And if you're interested in finding out what a low-power FM station is all about, the Embry-Riddle has, as well as Bethan Cookman, I believe. I've been to the studio over at Embry-Riddle, and it's really quite impressive. It costs about $50,000 to get on to the air with one of these low power stations, so we have a pretty serious, heavy fundraising requirement once we get the grant. And I assume that we are going to get the grant because the license, it's called a construction permit originally, and then you apply for the license, you get the license.
Right.
But it's a five-year period after getting the construction permit. You have to have the station up and running, and if you don't, then you lose the license. And there's one other party that's bid on the license, and that's the an organization called PAL of Florida, headed up by a gal by the name of Cynthia Tataro, who's the wife of the owner of WROD, the largest FM station in Daytona Beach. As far as I know, they don't have any points. That's a legitimate community organization, whereas we do. Sorry to have to say that, Cynthia. But anyway.
So maybe you could tell people just a little bit about what is community radio and what is the FCC intending to carve out?
Well, I think what they would like to do, Jerry, is try to foster independent media. And maybe for the first time in a while, they're trying to do something right. I don't know. I'm not really an expert at this. I just learned a little bit about this early on and decided to get involved and work with an organization up in Philadelphia called Prometheus Radio. Mm-hmm. And they were nice enough to give me a lot of helpful hints on how to do the application and such without actually charging me any money. And I was grateful for that. And the application process, the cutoff was November 15th. And, you know, there were some problems with that because the government shut down, and we kind of had to work around that. It was a little nerve-wracking. But eventually, you know, we got the application in and sorted all those issues out. And now we're just waiting for a response from the FCC so that we can begin the fundraising part of this. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to tell you about this.
It's exciting to hear about it.
Yeah.
What is the content of community programming? What's that all about?
Well, it all has to be locally originated programming, or at least a major portion of it. I believe the FCC requirement is 8 hours a day of locally originated programming. So essentially, this gives us the ability to talk about local issues, work with people in the local arts community, people doing a whole range of things, and give them an opportunity to reach out to the public.
Right.
And the actual broadcast range of the signal, as I understand it, is 5 to 10 miles, depending upon how built up the area is. You know, if you're in a city, it might be 2 miles or 5 miles, but if you're in a rural area, it'd be like 10 miles. And then, as I understand it, there is, after 2 years of successful broadcasting, you can get a full signal.
You could convert to a regular commercial station.
As I understand it.
Interesting.
Yes, that is the case. So we're really hopeful about this, and I'm really grateful that I've got some really good people on the board who've been helping me, and they have given me the advice that I need to make the decisions that are important to keep this thing going. And if anybody out there would like to consider being a member of the board, I would hope that maybe you would contact me. Or
how can you be reached?
Well, I'll give you my phone number, Jerry. My home phone is area code 386-672-3426. I've got a cell, 386 6795018, and we're looking for maybe half a dozen new board members. We've got six right now, but we'd like to expand it. We have a fundraising requirement for the board that they help us with the some of the expenses, minor expenses right now. If anybody would like to make a contribution or a pledge, I'd really appreciate it. And
well, it's great.
Yeah. I appreciate being here, Jerry.
How long do you anticipate before they make a decision on your license application?
I talked to an official in Washington not too long ago, and they said they're in the process of making decisions. They couldn't give me a timetable. Sometime in the spring, as I understand it. Because we're in what they call an MX group, that means mutual exclusive, where two organizations are bidding. It'll take longer. They have to resolve it. But hopefully, before the summer, I guess we'll know.
It's great. It's right around the corner.
Yep.
Well, we'll promote your station.
I appreciate
here as well
you.
When you get up there.
I appreciate
running,
it,
man.
Yes.
It's interesting that you earlier you mentioned not only local content in terms of politics and considerations, but arts and leisure as well. That we were. Cover some cultural issues, perhaps hear some poetry being read on the radio.
Absolutely. That's one of the things I proposed to the Live Poet Society. That
local musicians playing on the air.
Correct. Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, it just sounds like a fantastic opportunity.
I think it will be.
And a much different level of programming. I want to tell you also that this book, Charles, I'll get you a copy of this, Fighting for Air, because he has at least one chapter in there, dealing with low level, and the man, the man is a tremendous researcher. I was thinking about this when you consider the conglomeration of all of the media, and like we say, there's eight people deciding what is or is not art. And what should or should not be broadcast to you? There's nothing quite like war to sell a movie, is there?
You know, I'd like to. When we were talking this morning a little bit, a couple of examples were mentioned. Like even down when you're talking about that level of control, like even down to the call in and win. Where people think it's a local competition and local programming. I'm not sure if that would come from Jim or Jerry.
There's a special phrase for it, and I can't think, something about drop programming or something, where there'll be a DJ in Omaha who works at the lead station, and his voice will appear in 60 markets. And in the other markets, they phrase everything as if it's a local, it seems like you're listening to a local voice, but you're simply not. And then they have cutaways where the person in Omaha says, good morning, Orlando, but they're 2,000 miles away. And so it's all done by cart, it just plays through the board. They don't even need an engineer.
It's like the Weather Channel. Yeah. It's like the Weather Channel. There's one studio in Ohio for the country. It's not quite so bad, I don't think, for the Weather Channel, other than because you don't expect the weatherman to be right anyway, but it's called RAC, isn't it, Jerry? Isn't it?
Yeah,
it's called
right.
RAC. That's what it is. Yeah, and we're dealing with that, like I say, continuously on most of the programming that people are getting is this RAC stuff.
So we're getting kind of close to the end of the show, and it's definitely branched out into some important subjects. I know you guys did more research. I didn't really do much of anything for today. So what should we do?
If you're deep into the FCC part of this and the proposed ownership rules, you can find that information on Lexology. And there's a nice summary dated April 17, 2014, of the further notice of proposed rulemaking, which was April 15, 2014. And it explains all of the consolidation rules and cross-ownership rules that they want to change. And you might want to speak to them. There's a public comment period on the rule. And if you think that this doesn't end up with diversity of viewpoints being shared on local radio or crowds out coverage of local issues. Make it known to the FCC.
I did, I don't know, probably 8 or 10 hours yesterday. I did more research for this than I do for my own program, which is, you know, a testimony to
we
something.
We appreciate your job.
Yeah, it's a great work, yeah. But I exhausted Google, you know, media consolidation, FCC, and they, I mean, the whole thing, there's like a long, long list of Moyer's programs. Moyer's been dealing up with this subject. If you, Colin Powell's kid, did a great disservice.
Former FCC chairman.
Did a great disservice.
Well, so support your...
We want to thank you guys for coming in, Jim, LeGarry.
Thanks.
And you can listen to Citizen Soapbox again every Friday on WELE 1380 AM from 6:30 to 8 PM. And Charles Knaus, we wish you well with your application to the FCC for a low-power FM permit.
I appreciate it.
And we encourage you to find out if your local radio is actually local radio. And if it is local radio, support your local radio. WELE 1380 AM is local radio.
And we want to wish Liz a happy birthday, and we're going to be going out today with Take California from the Propellerheads. Peace.
It's a great pleasure. It's a great, great pleasure. It's a great pleasure to have all of you here today. I thought you all might begin your tour here.
This program was paid for by its sponsor, which is solely responsible for its content and the views expressed.
Thanks for listening again. This is Occupy Radio, and tonight we've been listening to Air Occupy, an episode produced out of Ormond Beach, Florida, clear across the country. They are talking about the importance of local community radio, and also discussed on tonight's episode was the upcoming rule changes by the FCC and how it relates to low-power FM stations. Again, thank you for listening. This is Occupy Radio. I'm Jimmy Tardy. A thank you to our supporters for the past 2.5 years. And don't forget, the pledge drive is coming up next week, so be ready to continue your support for your local community radio station, KBOO Portland, KBOO.
Because this is where they buy the politicians. Because this is where power has its seat. Because 99% of us are suffering at the mercy of the madmen on this street. Because all of us are victims of class warfare being waged on us by the 1%. Because these greedy banksters rob the country, leaving us without the means to pay the rent. Because the last time that we had a decent government was about 1932. Because we the people are supposed to run this country, but instead it's all run by and for the few. Because now we know the rich do not pay taxes, but when they need a hand, it's us who bail them out. Because we suspected we lived in a plutocracy, but suddenly of late there is no doubt. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because both my parents lost their savings. Because I have never opened an account. Because the interest on my credit card just doubled. And now I can't pay the minimum amount. Because these budget cuts are just immoral. That our schools as overcrowded as they are. Because there are no buses where I live. But I can't afford to drive a car. Because so many of us don't have health insurance. The rest of us have it, but it's because the rich are flying in their private jets. While the rest of us are slogging through the muck. Because capitalism isn't working. This system has just failed to produce because the 1% are...
You've been listening to Occupy Radio. It's been a rebroadcast of the podcast from Occupy Eugene Media Group and Air Occupy. Been talking today about FCC rules and changes and low power FM stations and, most importantly, local community produced radio programming. Again, this is Occupy Radio. I'm Jimmy Tardy. Thank you for listening. And as we go into our pledge drive, please keep us in mind and continue your support for your local community station, KBOO, KBOO. Has been part of the Occupy movement from the very beginning here locally, and we continue that relationship today. And that's because you, the listener, have supported KBOO. KBOO relies on you. So let's continue to make local community programming happen by pledging your support. Again, this is Occupy Radio, and I'm Jimmy Tardy. And whatever you do, remember,
Occupy, Occupy.
Do you see it? It's all around us. It's an assault on our rights, our freedoms, our food, our jobs, our children's education, and ultimately an assault on the only life support system we have, Mother Earth.
Earth Day to May Day, a global convergence for climate justice, is taking place around the world and here in Cascadia from April 22nd to May 1st. The 10 days of action will include teach-ins, protests, call-in campaigns, and direct action. KBOO is a sponsor of local events and is committed to bringing you full coverage of the global climate convergence. Find out more at kboo.fm/earthday.